This is Actualize Freedom, straight talk on growing clicks and conversions on Amazon FBA from people doing it every day. Now here's your host, digital marketing acrobat, Danny Kenji Carlson.
What's up, guys? Danny Carlson here from the Actualize Freedom podcast. And today we have the first ever round two on the Actualize Freedom podcast. About a year ago or so, we had on Mr. Jeremy Shirk. He's one of the co-founders of Nested Naturals. It's an eight-figure supplement brand on Amazon. And I met him when I was living in Vancouver. Him and his partner, Kevin, have just built a really incredible company that you should definitely check out the previous episodes with both Jeremy and Kevin. But they go into a lot of detail about how they've built such a tight-knit team. They have an office in Vancouver with a meditation room. They have an unlimited vacation policy. Some very, very interesting stuff. And he's now doing some really interesting stuff for the personal brand and podcast as well. So Jeremy's just one of those guys that there's always so much stuff to dive into. And so I couldn't really do it justice with just the one episode. So we had to have him back on here. So welcome to the podcast once again, Mr. Jeremy Shirk. How's it going, man?
Danny, happy to be here, brother. Thanks for having me, my man.
Excellent. And so the last time we talked, we're going more into kind of how you built the company and how you structure your team and a lot of that stuff. And this one, I'd like to dive more into, you know, what has changed since that conversation. There's been a lot of challenges that have come up in Amazon. As you know, you've been in the game for a while. It changes all the time. So maybe we can start there. I know one of the biggest challenges that met Amazon sellers in the past year or so was a big review sweep by Amazon, where they're just taking away mass amounts of reviews, a lot of fake ones, but a lot of legitimate ones too. And you guys got swept up in that and had to deal with that. So maybe let's start there.
Yeah, last summer, we kind of joke about it around the office. We call it the summer of hell. definitely unprecedented in Amazon's history as far as a crackdown is concerned. They've done many things over the years as far as changing policy, removing reviews, going after bad actors on their platform. But this was just an unprecedented sweep that really spawned out of the bad press they were getting in some of the big news publications. It's just something we weathered. It's something we dealt with. Obviously, in the moment, you're wondering what the future is going to look like for your business, if this is ever going to stop, if it's only going to get worse. I've always looked at the positive side of things, and I do know that at the end of the day, Amazon's not going anywhere. Their platform is not going anywhere. The sellers on their platform, they're not just going to remove in one clean sweep. Obviously, they got rid of some of the worst actors, like I said, but that's just something we had to weather, and we dealt with it. Sales definitely dipped. A lot of the reviews did come back on some of the products. So again, that just goes to show with Amazon, it's very unpredictable at times how things are going to play out. And I just know, like with a lot of the communities, you know, many people were selling their businesses, just jumping ship, completely pulling the plug. And we were in no position to do that based on how big we've grown at this point with our team. And, you know, with the volume of sales we do, and with the future and the vision we have for this company, that was just never an option for us. So it was really about just buckling down, taking whatever Amazon threw at us, and just having the resilience to push through.
Yeah. And for the people that they see no correlation between the amount of reviews and the amount of sales, what do you have to say to them after your experience in this situation?
So the correlation of reviews to sales, saying that that does not exist. Could you clarify that question?
So like a lot of people, they make the argument that once you have a certain amount of reviews, whether it be like 50 or 100 reviews or something like that, then it doesn't really matter that your competitor has 1,000 reviews and you're still going to be able to sell the same amount. Or if, in this case, you had ASINs with a large amount of reviews that lost the reviews. And what did you see happen to the sales during that period?
In the moment, we didn't notice any drastic dips in sales. Yes, we noticed somewhat of a drop, but all our main competitors were dealing with the same thing. So it was really a level playing field at the end of the day. No one was really coming out far, far ahead. Everyone was dealing with the same type of unpredictability and, you know, just reviews disappearing, not sure if they'd come back. So yes, it disrupted sales somewhat, but it's not like things plummeted to concerning levels. We knew we would come out of this ahead and back to the position we were, because we knew we weren't doing the black hat stuff that a lot of our competitors were doing. The ones that were, the ones that were competing neck to neck with us, were also dealing with the same thing. So as I said, that leveled the playing field. And again, we just knew if we just persevered, we just buckled down and, you know, obviously became more mindful of costs and expenditures, weren't doing anything too aggressive or too risky with other business initiatives or launching new products or whatever. You know, we got very conservative and just pulled the reins back on things. We knew we would come out. But yeah, definitely going from, you know, four figures of reviews, you know, down to maybe low three figures, none of our products actually had that happen. Even our Luna sleep aid product, with I don't even know how many reviews it has. I think it's in 4,000 or 5,000 now. It dropped down to 2,000. So we still had that comma. It's not like it went down to numbers like, you know, 200 reviews. That might have been a different story. But yeah, that's all I can really say on that topic.
Yeah, and I mean, that's obviously a very, very stressful situation. And so how did you deal with this from a stress or emotion standpoint? Like, I'm sure at certain points you must have been just losing your mind. What are some of the things that really, really helped calm you down and actually look at this from a real strategic standpoint?
Danny, honestly, I've been through enough things with Amazon now. I don't know if it's the way I'm wired or if I've been through enough shit over my life and through other businesses that this stuff happens. I mean, I'm not losing my mind. I'm really looking at it as, okay, some of the reasons I just said, okay, we've lost reviews. Well, so have all our other competitors we're competing with. So it's a level playing field. We're not at any tremendous disadvantage out of this. I know we've done things the right way in the past and haven't subjected the business to high risk activities, doing black hat review acquisition tactics and what have you. So I knew that whatever would happen, that we would be okay. And some people might say, oh, that's naive or you're being overly optimistic. But that's really what has gotten me through all these stressful periods, whether it's with Amazon or anything else with running our business, with legal disputes. I just know that I'm always wanting to look at ways where we can mitigate risk. And I'm not wanting to be too reckless with our decisions. And I just know that, yeah, things won't go your way at times, but it's just another day and you just got to buckle down and get through it. And I know I can't, a lot of the peers I have in this industry don't think that way. A lot of them can overreact or maybe they're reacting reasonably based on the situation. But I can just say for myself and my own experience, I just knew like it wouldn't turn out to be a drastic thing that people were saying it was. And you know, if it did, I'd stand corrected, I'd be wrong, but that's just what my gut was telling me. And maybe I've developed enough thick skin over the years to be able to deal with these types of things.
Yeah, and I'm certainly sure that it helps that you don't really have those same skeletons in your closet that a lot of your competitors might have. It's like, oh, we've been doing review manipulation really hardcore and they're probably going to find out now. Then maybe they wouldn't be sleeping as well.
That's a cause for concern if that was the case for us. But I just knew deep down like that wasn't. And I knew we had a good customer base. And you know, we've also diversified. We're not at a level where I can say like if Amazon shut down tomorrow, which is very unlikely, but if they shut us down, knock on wood, I don't see that happening. But if they did, we've got enough diversification to keep the lights on. It's not as much as I'd want it to be. We're definitely working actively to diversify ourselves more than we are. But that's also like in the back of my mind that I know like not everything is in Amazon for our business. A large part of it is, but not everything. And we'd still be able to keep the lights on and figure out a strategy to persevere.
Yeah, and so that's very interesting because last conversation that we had about a year ago on your last podcast episode, you're mentioning your first attempt at diversification was a little bit too aggressive. You're putting inventory in Walmart, into you know all these various fulfillment centers, and it's moving over at a way smaller rate. And you actually had to scale that back a little bit. What has changed since that conversation with your off-Amazon strategy?
We pulled the reins back and realized we were spreading ourselves too thin in certain areas. So we pulled the reins back in that regard, but we have focused on a few key initiatives that we're giving our full attention. So that's a paid traffic campaign utilizing Facebook and Google and whatnot. We're working on a funnel and working with an agency that's helping us dial that in. And also wholesale relationships and wholesale accounts that we've been able to grow without much effort, but we're putting more effort in it and we're taking it very seriously because, you know, developing those relationships, there's a lot of people out there that obviously don't shop on Amazon or even on the internet. Working with these retailers that have, you know, their own clientele, these trusted clientele, not a big retailer like Walmart. That's a totally different game. And I know people have gone in that direction. Maybe we will do that one day, but we're focused on really dealing with smaller retailers and developing those relationships and just creating a brand where these retailers are reaching out to us. Like, we're getting more inquiries than we can handle right now, which is why we're devising and developing more of a system in which these retailers can basically serve themselves with bulk orders of our products. And that's just another way to diversify. Those are our two main focuses right now.
So we're going to start seeing Ness and Naturals on the store shelves of places like supplement stores and everything like that is what you're saying?
We're already dealing with some small retailers in the Northwestern US and I believe down in California. Again, I don't get the full updates on all these details as much as I used to just because I'm operating at a higher level within the company. But yeah, I mean, definitely your neighborhood store or supplement or vitamin place or even grocer, you could very likely see our products on the shelves, especially as we move forward this year and beyond and take this more seriously and put more resources into it.
Yeah, and you are operating, like you said, from a higher level. It's much different than most of the supplement Amazon sellers that we're all going to be hearing from a lot of the time. Usually they're very lean operations, maybe just them and a partner, or them and a partner and a few team members. And the whole sole goal of the business is to build it to a certain level and sell it, right? In the shortest period of time possible. But you've taken the different approach. You built out a team. Like, what is the team at now? How many team members do you have?
Grand total, when you add everyone up, it's over 20. We've downsized slightly in our office in Vancouver just because we realized we had some redundancy or there was some positions we had that we just realized we'd either outgrown it or it just wasn't the right fit. But yeah, you add everyone up, we're over 20.
So over 20, so yeah. And that's not a small team, right? And that's a team actually in a Vancouver office, going in and meditating in the mornings in the meditation room and hanging out there, right? So what I'm interested to hear is, what does it mean for you to operate at a higher level when you have someone taking care of the finances? You have, you know, your partner Kevin is the chief marketing officer, and now you have a team of 20 people working for you. What are you really spending your time on day to day?
Yeah, I guess I may have touched on this in the previous discussion or previous podcast we had. I'm going to mention it again now, though. But a big part of my entrepreneurial journey with growing this company specifically has been recognizing that I'm not a superhero, recognizing that as most startup entrepreneurs, solopreneurs do suffer from this thing called superhero syndrome, where I can do everything the best, no one can do it as good as me, and this tendency to hold on to things. Part of my growth is becoming aware of that and then subsequently letting things go and realizing that there's other people out there that can do things better than me. And it's actually, as you grow, it's impossible to hold on to everything because you're always going to be that bottleneck, slowing things down and preventing your company and your team members from thriving and moving things forward. So it just came to some, you know, discussions, having some discussions with myself, developing that self-awareness, and then slowly being able to let things go over time. I still deal with that. It's still there, but I've let go of so much now that I'm not necessarily on the front lines knowing what's going on with every single detail in every single corner of the company. And I'm more focused on, especially as of this calendar year, Danny, coming to the harsh realization that I am not a good manager. I consider myself a good leader and really setting the course and setting the strategy and the vision. But the day-to-day management, just coming to the harsh realization that I'm actually not very good at it. And it's not something I particularly enjoy even. So one thing my business partner and I have done starting this year, calendar year 2019, is really step away from that day-to-day. We go in once a week. The rest of the week, we're focused on higher level things. And that's doing things like developing relationships outside the company, networking, figuring out new directions or new ways we can move the company, looking at the company from the outside in, or I should say, looking at the company from a bird's eye view, looking inside from the outside and determining where the needs are, where the vulnerabilities are, what people we need in place, maybe not this quarter, but next quarter to reach our goals, and really looking at things from a macro level, getting good people in place under us, like promoting someone to general manager to look over the office while we're not there. Those have been kind of the key maneuvers we've made in, you know, the last 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, and I truly believe that is something that more entrepreneurs should really do, even at a much smaller level, is hire, some books would call it the integrator, the person who is going to take your vision and make sure that it happens with the other team members, to take you out of the management role too. That's funny enough, I actually had a similar realization in the past year or so, is that I'm not actually a very good manager and I don't enjoy it. It actually drains my energy quite a lot. And hiring someone that does enjoy that and is better at communicating to the team and getting that off your plate has freed me up to look at the vision of like where I want to go and everything like that too. So can you give us some examples of like your typical day? Is it different every day? Like one day you're looking into new marketing strategies, or another day you're looking at different networking opportunities to grow your brand. Is it just really changing for different strategic opportunities you're looking at?
My day to day, I mean, starting with this calendar year, I really set the goal for myself, Danny, to make 2019 a year of personal growth and personal care. The last 3 to 4 years of my life have been all business growth, driving growth of the company, and you know, putting the business ahead of myself, which I think is necessary at times as an entrepreneur. We talk about this thing called balance, which I think is in an ideal world you can achieve on a day to day basis, but realistically, sometimes you're achieving balance on a quarterly basis. You know, maybe it's a quarter of like business, growth, late nights, you know, long days. And then the next quarter, it's like dialing things back and really focus on the personal. So that's been my ethos to start 2019, because I really want to put myself in the position where I can operate my best and I'm functioning my best, because I think I'm bringing myself to Nested Naturals in the best way when that I make that my focus. As far as how I structure my days, it's not as like structured and as calculated, I guess, as I'd like it to be. But really, the focus has been like Kevin and I have gone to several different events already to start this year for networking, different conferences, you know, having Zoom calls. Like we're having this podcast now, but having Zoom calls with people and resources that we've always had in our back pocket, but maybe we haven't reached out to at times, just because we're so locked into the day-to-day of our business and just maintaining those relationships and getting advice from other people working on the outside or other people who are experts in their field. I don't know if that fully answers your question, but really putting self-care as a priority and then letting that trickle down as far as how we approach Nested. We have our weekly check-ins with our direct reports. We offer insight and input when needed throughout the week. But then otherwise throughout the week, you know, Kevin and I are figuring out new strategy, or we're networking, learning things from other people, reading these sorts of other things. It's like getting information from the outside as opposed to being in the inside of your business, I think is imperative.
Oh, I love it. And I completely agree. And before we segue into what you're doing with all of the mindset stuff that you've been putting out, which I've been consuming and it's been really good, I just want to ask you the open-ended question, like what does focusing on personal care really mean to you?
Great question. I know I remember vividly on the last podcast, we talked about a bit of biohacking stuff, but for me, it obviously starts with like a good morning routine, journaling, meditation, doing some movement, drinking my lemon salt water mix, doing a bit of visualization, making sure the exercise is happening, not neglecting the exercise. And that could look like anything, whether it's gym time or whether it's getting outside. Reading, I think I said reading already. And that can be, you know, YouTube videos, podcasts, just learning in some way, shape, or form. Making that a priority, which I find, I can only speak for myself, when you're in the day-to-day hustle of the business and it's like 12-hour plus days on your business, that stuff can get pushed to the wayside. And before you know it, you're not reading, you're not going to the gym, you're not getting sleep. You know, those sort of like main criteria so that you can function at your best, making those a priority. That's what that looks like in my life as far as integrating it.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that was just so well put. And I'm sure nobody listening to this podcast could relate to that, right? No one has ever neglected the exercise and all of the good stuff to get a little bit more work done.
Myself out now. Like I've probably in the last 3 years, Danny, have reached burnout like 3 times. So I'm a lot more conscious now of the early signs of burnout happening. Whereas in the past, I just like neglect them. No, got to get work done. Got to push through. Got to reach the goals. And who cares? I'm much more self-aware on those early warning signs of burnout. And I'm much more careful about walking that path towards burnout versus stepping back and saying, okay, you know, I need a vacation, or I need to just like start getting the workouts in and start getting the sleep back, because this is not going to lead to a good direction. The ebb and flow of, or the volatility of burning out and crashing and then recovery is much more harsh and much more counterproductive than keeping that more level. And I talk about having day-to-day balance. I mean, that's in the ideal world would happen. As an entrepreneur, I think that's an unrealistic expectation. But to just be mindful of those signs of burnout or when you're starting to dip down and come in and start to move that trajectory back upwards before it gets to a too negative a place.
Yeah, so for you, it's a two-parted question here. Like, what are a few of the indicators to you when you are nearing that burnout that you notice and you realize you're nearing burnout? And then two, what do you then do in reaction to kind of make sure that you're going to be hitting those things? Do you then like schedule in like, hey, this is my, like, I'm going to schedule in these 3 or 4 gym sessions this week. I'm going to schedule in this vacation, like right at that point in response to it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the early warning signs are I start to lose the passion for what I'm doing. I become more irritable. I become less focused. I'm not sleeping as well. It's so funny, like with insomnia and burnout, it's like a downward spiral of you're not sleeping. So you need sleep even more, but you get up and like you work and have your stuff you got to do and you go to sleep the next night and then you're still not sleeping. So it's like this, it's this downward spiral. So stepping in and just taking a full day off work, for example, and not having any agenda, not even having like goals as far as reading or fitness, just giving yourself that time to do absolutely nothing and just recuperate, right? Like just let yourself rejuvenate, taking a weekend, having no agenda, maybe going for a massage, going for a sauna. I love to do hot saunas, the hot and cold sort of Scandinavian spa type thing. I don't always go to Whistler for that. But as long as you can do the hot, cold, you're getting that experience. You don't have to go to some fancy spa. Like I said, massage. Booking a trip if I feel that's needed. You know, I'm going to Asia or going somewhere I like to go. I went to Asia late last year because I was really feeling burnt out, and that was one of the most amazing things I could have done. Those the early signs then, like irritability, lack of focus, lack of passion for what you're doing. The sleep starts to get thrown off. You're not going to the gym, lack of motivation. All those things to me are signs of burnout already arriving, or it's coming very close. And then I threw in kind of the solutions I have to that there afterwards.
Yeah. And I think that's such an important thing to be conscious of. I'm kind of in a similar stage to you where I'm starting to recognize the signs a little bit earlier. And to give a little bit different perspective, some of those early signs for me are I'll start spending more time watching YouTube videos and Instagram, just like dumb stuff to like the burnt out brain just wants to like consume. Like, I'm talking stupid videos. I'm talking like videos of like people in Russia having road rage or like just dumb stuff that's not good for your brain at all. That's a good indicator. And then another one, if I start to like really crave junk food for some reason, when I hit that point, I just start to crave like sugary junky foods. And like you said, it's a bit of a spiral, right? So like maybe you go eat junk food, and then it's gonna mess with your sleep, or you're up late at night watching YouTube videos, and then it's just like it can compound on itself so quickly, right?
That's so interesting, because I didn't exactly put it that way, but you put it better. When the burnout is approaching, or you're already there, the habits and the things you do almost perpetuate it if you're not aware. Like the junk food, like you just said, or watching mindless videos, it almost like it feeds itself. So that's why you have to be extra aware and extra cautious of it.
Totally love that. And this would be a good time to segue into what you're now doing with the podcast. You recently launched a podcast. So tell us a little bit about what's behind that and why you're doing it.
Yes. Well, I've been doing the YouTube videos for 2 years now, and I started, I don't know when, sometime within the last year, started just uploading the audio of those videos to my own podcast, just the Jeremy Shirk podcast. I don't promote that podcast. It's essentially just my YouTube video content in audio form. However, my business partner and I, Kevin, started a podcast between the two of us. We did 4 episodes. It has not launched. It has not gone live yet because we're still determining the direction we want to take it. But that is more of a collaboration between him and I, and it hasn't been flicked live yet. So I'm assuming that's what you're speaking of, because somehow that got leaked. I mean, I'm mentioning it to you now, and then people hear it. And so that's the status there. But Kevin and I just wanted to do something together and offer value to people based on, you know, how far we've come along on this journey. I mean, obviously there's a lot of people ahead of us, but we know that there's a lot of people starting out that are maybe looking to someone like Kevin and I. Have been doing this for 5 years. We have an 8-figure company. We're growing. We're doing well. And we get a lot of satisfaction out of just giving back and giving people unique content that comes from an authentic place.
And so what type of content? Because both of you are very skilled at both business and mindset stuff. And I know a lot of the YouTube videos that you've been putting out is a mix of both, right? So is it going to be the same with the podcast? What's the whole mantra of it, really?
Yeah, like I said, we're still determining the exact direction. But at the end of the day, it's really going to be our experience as entrepreneurs. Like it's going to be somehow a theme that's threaded into the fact that Kevin and I have grown this company, what it takes to get there, the challenges we face, the lessons we've learned. There's going to be a common thread around that sort of theme. It's going to be very entrepreneurial and success oriented, though. It's just finding that exact theme and, I guess, niche that we want to really represent and really stay true to, I guess. We're still figuring that out. But our first 4 episodes, I mean, I could share with you, we're talking about just like working together as partners, some of the challenges we face with hiring, setting values for your company. So it's all sort of lessons we've taken out of our entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah, and I've seen you guys speak before at a conference. You guys are both very well-spoken, great public speakers, and you have a really, really interesting set of knowledge to pull from, really, because I feel like you guys have gone from, you know, not the typical Amazon seller route to actually growing this company, and it's such a unique standpoint that not many people are really, I don't think anyone's really saying what you guys have to say at the moment, so I'm really excited to see those.
Excellent. Yeah, that's our feeling exactly, and why we think there's a good opportunity with this message, and it's going to be helpful to people.
Awesome. And maybe is there a particular moment since our last conversation, like within the past year or so, any big like aha moment or insight or learnings that you had since our last conversation in your business?
Again, Danny, I think the biggest thing was really coming to the realization that myself and Kevin are not good managers. I mean, we grew this company to what it is, but it got to the point where, like, the day-to-day and stuff happening in the office and a lot of the problems that were arising internally, like nothing drastic per se, but some problems coming up with communication or people not being clear or, you know, interpersonal stuff with the team. We realized a lot of it was traced back to the fact that, like, Kevin and I are not corporate or business managers. I mean, that's a very specific skill set. We don't have experience with that. I mean, I have some management experience working at companies, but not a long resume. And we're more entrepreneurial. I mean, we're creative. We want to move fast. We want to bring new ideas to the table. We want to inspire the team. But dealing with the day-to-day management and process of running an office is not our strength. And that was a big aha moment that we had late last year. And we've already taken steps to rectify and correct that moving forward by bringing in or promoting proper people to take those positions, to really lead the team internally, set the proper systems and processes and communication procedures that need to be in place. When dealing with a group at the size we are, that's another thing. When you're 5 people, when you're 8 people, when you're even 10 people, as you grow 12, 15, 20, new problems emerge the bigger the group grows. Because when you're just a small group of 5 people or 8 people, you can get away with things that you can't get away when you're 15 or 20. That's also the other realization, just with the way you communicate things, with the way you have meetings, with the way you have processes set in place to get things done and have accountability. It's much different as you grow. And that was, I guess, a slow unraveling for us of realization as we grew. We could get away with it at 5 or 8, you know, Kevin and I at the controls within the office, being there every day. But as we got larger, some of these problems started to bubble up and we looked at ourselves and realized it came down to us. We aren't pointing the fingers at anyone but us. We're causing these problems with our lack of experience and know-how. Let's bring in proper people, you know, from the highest level of management in the company to really dictate the pace, dictate the tone, and help move things forward so that they're moving smoothly and these problems aren't bubbling up all the time.
And so how did this realization come about? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people listening right now that find themselves squarely in, oh my God, you just described exactly my situation right now. So was it something that, like, either you or Kevin just kind of realized and then brought up to each other, or was it someone externally or an employee or something that really triggered that realization?
Love your questions today, man. You're on point. These are awesome. It was a combination of all of those. It was a combination of all those forces coming into our reality. For me, the burnout late last year, the burnout, a big part of that was trying to manage and juggle everything that's going on in the office. Like every problem, not every problem, but a lot of the issues, it's like they come to us and you're dealing with 17 people. It's too much to manage. It's too much to maintain. People communicating to us in the office, like us making a decision and then maybe someone coming to us after and saying, you know, that could have been communicated this way. And us thinking, oh, you're right. Yeah, that problem wouldn't have happened if we communicated something better. And then Kevin and I ultimately having the realization ourselves, like, it just got to the point, like, look, it's like we're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole here. Let's bring in someone who's experienced and can handle a lot of this stuff and consult us when needed. Ultimately, we're still the founders. We're still the owners of this company. We're as passionate about it as ever. But again, it comes way, way back to what I said earlier about the self-awareness and letting go. This was just like the next layer of things for us to let go of. Being that authoritative presence in the office doesn't need to be us, and it shouldn't be us. Shouldn't be us. We should put someone more experienced in place to handle this. And that's kind of been our last aha moment. And we're still implementing it. Like it's not like it's fully implemented to where we want it to be. There's still kinks that need to be ironed out. And the people we've promoted haven't fully embodied their roles because there's just a transition happening going on. There's a transition happening right now into our office. And the future looks very bright though. And we're definitely moving in the right direction now that we've made these changes. So anyone listening saying, I'm in that same position, Like, where do you feel resistance? Where do you feel friction with where you're operating in your company? If you're constantly feeling friction in certain areas, like employees saying, for example, I'm not clear on something, and you feel like you've communicated things in a clear way, that's likely a testament to your quality of communication or how you're communicating. I would just take note of where you're noticing friction, where you don't enjoy working within your company. Those are places to start with outsourcing. And that goes back to even like day one when you're looking to hire the first person. But even when you're at 15, 20 people like us, that still comes up and you still have to constantly be monitoring, okay, where am I experiencing resistance and friction on an ongoing basis? That's something I need to address and perhaps bring someone in who's going to do a better job than I can. And everyone's going to be happier as a result.
I love that. I love that. So well put. And before we end things here, there's one more thing that I want to ask you about, just because it's a super hot topic in the Amazon space right now. The messenger marketing. I know you're doing some stuff off of Amazon with the funnel right now. Do you see messenger marketing as one of the top viable off Amazon strategies for sellers in 2019?
So are you talking about ManyChat, like using the Facebook Messenger stuff? Is that what you're describing?
Exactly. Yeah. ManyChat. Yeah. Anything that operates on the Messenger platform.
Facebook. Yes. Messenger. That is currently the hot thing right now for good reason. A lot of the Amazon brands are making use of that and benefiting from that. It seems to be, I'm always leery though of things becoming exploited. And again, I don't know what that would look like with this tactic or this method. Maybe it has a longer lifespan than others, but yes, I absolutely agree. It's a hot thing right now. We are making use of it in different ways. But we have other methods as well, and I'd love to disclose them, but I can't for competitive reasons. But yeah, I would just say, use something while it's available, while it's hot, absolutely. But don't think it's the be all and end all. Always be looking for something else, and you want to diversify your means for customer acquisition and lead acquisition and making sales just as much as you want to actually diversify your platforms and where you appear. You don't want to rely on one review acquisition strategy or one communication strategy, because again, you are vulnerable when it comes down to the at the end of the day, you need diversification in all areas. And that's a really long-winded answer to that question. But yes, it is the hot thing right now. It is working very well. But don't rely just on that, is my advice.
Yeah, and I think that's great advice, especially for this, because Facebook Messenger can be in a similar way that Amazon can suspend your account. Like at a moment's notice, Facebook can also remove your Facebook Messenger privileges at any moment for any dumb reason. You know, a lot of it's automated. So your email, obviously you're using email as well. Are you seeing email as a more valuable source than Facebook Messenger, or the other way around?
No, Facebook is more valuable at this time than email. Definitely. Because with email, you have your list, you have your predetermined list. With Facebook Messenger, the way you can get those people in the flow is through retargeting and other methods, right? You don't need that email acquisition to then follow up with them. I think there's more creative ways to get people on your Messenger lists that make it more widespread as far as who you're reaching and how big your audience is. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I think you're right about that too, is that there's so many more ways for people to opt in. It's easier. They just click one button or just like add a comment on a ManyChat comment to message feature or something like that. And more people see the messages, right? That's kind of where the future is going, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's a great point. As far as like that versus email, yeah, it's the future. I mean, people have been talking about the decline of email for a long time now. And you just look at social, and I spend so much less time in email personally, just on a personal level, than I used to, versus the social platforms like Instagram, Facebook, where you're communicating with people. And it's definitely the direction things are going. No question.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully no one in here is communicating with me through email, because they're probably angry at me at this point. Usually takes me 3 days to get back to an email, because I don't like checking email. There's so much garbage in there all the time that people don't like it. And for now, Facebook Messenger is not that place. Facebook does a good job of making sure that people are not sending out garbage and penalizing those people. So that's why I am pretty bullish on it. I think that Facebook is obviously going to guard that very heavily and make sure people are not getting spammed. Could you imagine if your Facebook Messenger was just getting all the same shit that shows up in your email on a day-to-day basis? It would just be a terrible experience, right? So I don't think Facebook is ever going to let that happen. I think it's a very good thing to go into. So Jeremy, that man, this has been an awesome, awesome round two. Did not disappoint. Definitely did not disappoint. Do you have any parting words or pieces of advice for the listeners today?
I know your audience is a lot of people. They're established on Amazon or they're starting out. I did an interview yesterday with a woman. She's doing interviews for Ryan Moran is launching this book. I don't know when exactly, and maybe I shouldn't have even said that, but he's launching a book. Maybe you first heard it here. And he's just talking about the entrepreneurial journey. And this woman asked me, what would be your parting? What are your final words of advice for someone starting out? And what I see all too often, and I've even in the conferences I go to, I was at one recently. It's so easy when you're going to conferences or learning things, listening to this podcast as an example, which are all tremendous sources of value and information. It's so easy to get overwhelmed and think a number of things. One, I have to do everything. I can't choose what to start with. There's so much to choose from. Or I need to have, you know, the next 10 steps planned out. I need to see 10 green lights in a row before I can feel safe about stepping forward and taking action. And I just think that's a huge tragedy. And I think for myself and my journey and anyone who's gotten started and gotten results and ultimately created success, as an entrepreneur, you never feel that. You can overplan and analyze as much as you want, but the variables change too often. And that plan, although it may give you a feeling of safety, you're going to have to adapt at some point. So I think as an entrepreneur, really what you need to exercise is that ability to act in the face of uncertainty and just move forward and take feedback and correct and continue as you go. And do not be paralyzed by this feeling or this need to have this perfect plan in place to execute, because you'll really never have that. And ultimately you won't take action as a result. And I think that's just a big tragedy. So that's my parting words for your audience, Danny. I hope they take that to heart, because I didn't have that starting out. I still am not certain about the next three quarters. We always plan every quarter out. We're getting a little bit better at forecasting and certain things, but the main thing as an entrepreneur is being adaptable. That is my philosophy.
Oh, and I love the analogy of the stoplights too, because let's say that by some statistical anomaly, you got six green lights all ready to go. Then you got to ask yourself, what is the probability that they're all going to stay green until you get your car through all six of those stoplights? It's never going to freaking happen, right? So I think that's a perfect analogy you just came up with.
Yeah. So I hope that's helpful. I hope that's helpful for your audience listening.
Awesome, Jeremy. So where can people find you if they want to follow you or reach out to you online?
You know what? Check Instagram at Jeremy Shirk. That's where I stay active with stories. That's where I'm promoting my video content, whether I put up a micro 1 minute video there or I have a YouTube promo. Hit me up on Instagram. I'd love to see you there.
Awesome, Jeremy. Well, it's been such a pleasure once again. Thank you so much for coming on and just giving people the real insight into what it's like to grow an incredible company like you and your partner Kevin have done so far. So thank you once again, and hope to have you on for round three one day. Once you hit the nine-figure mark, we'll have you on for round three here.
Danny, I look forward to that day. I'd love to be back for round three. And I just want to say it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me. I do a lot of podcasts, but I really love your questions and the direction you take the interview. I really enjoy these interviews with you. So thanks so much for having me. And I hope we see each other in person in Indonesia this summer.
Absolutely, man. I know you love surfing, and the surf out here is really good. I mean, pretty much everything else out here in Bali is really good as well. So hope to see you out here, man.
Thank you so much, Danny.
All right. And guys, if you want to see the show notes, then head over to kenjiroi.com/blog. And I have the show notes and any of the resources mentioned in this episode over there. And until next time, guys, thanks and take care.
For show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, visit kenjiroi.com.